The United States of Horror may contain some graphic or explicit content that is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
You can share. Other close calls.
When acidified, dissolved human remains were found, they didn't look like human remains anymore, but they were in the trash bin outside in the garage. That was one incident. And a few others I'd rather not go into right now.
Were you relieved to be arrested?
Part of me was, and part of me wasn't.
Explain.
I don't know. It's like I don't believe I have a split personality, but you know the feeling where you're sort of glad about something, but on the other hand, you're not. That's how it was. It was a relief not to have to keep such a gigantic secret that I had kept for so many years. And once I saw that I had no choice but to face it, I decided to face it head on and make a full confession. So I am glad that the secrets are gone.
All right, guys.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
To our part three.
Of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Not me. Not Jeffrey Good.
But the Jeffrey, bad Jeffrey. Joffrey.
Joffrey. King Joffrey is still a piece of... Those Game of Thrones people will understand that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Jeff here. Kelly here.
And we are the United States of Horror.
Question mark?
Why did you ask a question?
Because why not?
Who are we? Do we have split personality disorder?
I think I do. I think everyone does. You know when that one person cuts you off when you're driving and you're like, oh, I just wish I'd slit their throat and kill them.
Oh.
And then you're like, oh, wait, I'm sorry, that's against the law. Obviously, you know, you're not going to do it.
Oh, yeah, everybody does that.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Or, you know, you're like, I'm going to start brake checking them because they're brake checking me.
I think you just have bad road rage. I think that's what it is.
Maybe that's why. I did get like two tickets.
Two tickets. We are doing part three to our Wisconsin series, which we have been going over the details of
the infamous
Jeffrey Dahmer.
The people Dahmer. Purple people Ebo.
And as you heard from the beginning, Jeffrey Dahmer was talking about his relief in being arrested. And we started with that because we are finally to the last
stage,
his arrest. And we're going to be going over basically the whole trial period and just all that fun stuff.
And how, we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Plot twist, not really.
Kind of, not really. Anyway.
I'm pretty sure they know what happens, but they might not know how it happened.
That's very true. Yeah. So, I'm going to just jump right in. How do we feel about that?
Might as well jump. Jump.
On July 22nd, 1991, Dahmer approached three men with an offer of $100 to accompany him to his apartment to pose for nude photographs, drink beer, and simply keep him company.
That's the first mistake. Never ask for three people at the same time. Ask for one or two. You can get away with two, but never three.
Well, he thought of that. One of the trio, the 32-year-old Tracy Edwards, agreed to accompany him to his apartment. And the other two, I don't have it in my notes, but what happened was Dahmer took him in his car. And then the other two, he gave the wrong address to.
Oh.
So, yes. So Tracy was the one who was the intended victim. Upon entering Dahmer's apartment, Edwards noted a foul odor, several boxes of hydrochloric acid on the floor, which Dahmer claimed to use for cleaning bricks, which...
It's kind of like a brick. Brick in the head.
Because he's a brick.
House.
Oh, gosh. Anyway, after some minor conversation, Edwards responded to Dahmer's request to turn his head and view his tropical fish, whereupon Dahmer placed a handcuff upon his wrist. When Edwards asked what's happening, Dahmer unsuccessfully attempted to cuff his wrists together, then told Edwards to accompany him to the bedroom to pose for nude pictures. While inside the bedroom, Edwards noted nude male posters on the wall and that a videotape of The Exorcist 3 was playing. He also noted a blue 57-gallon drum in the corner from which a strong odor emanated.
Kinky.
Which, okay, The Exorcist, great movie. But The Exorcist 3?
You know the original Netflix and chill? How about Murder and Kill? It's the same thing, but...
Well...
First it murdered him, and then you're going to kill you.
A little redundant, but...
Yeah.
That's fine.
Double murder homicide.
Double murder homicide?
Yes.
Perfect. I guess that goes hand in hand.
My bad, guys.
I don't know. In an attempt to appease Dahmer, Edwards unbuttoned his shirt, saying he would allow him to do so. Dahmer then brandished a knife and informed Edwards he intended to take nude photos of him. In an attempt to appease Dahmer, Edwards unbuttoned his shirt, saying he would allow him to do so if he would remove the handcuffs and put the knife away. In response to this promise, Dahmer simply turned his attention towards the TV. Edwards observed Dahmer rocking back and forth and chanting before turning his attention back to him. I'm not really sure what's going on in that head of his.
Chanting, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know a little bit based off of my research, but...
Yeah.
We'll cover it a little bit.
Okay. Keep going.
He placed his head on Edwards' chest, listening to his heartbeat, and with the knife pressed against his intended victim, informed Edwards he intended to eat his heart. So imagine just, like, cuddling, which is non-consensual cuddling at this point, because he's cuddling at knife point.
So ruddling. What?
What?
Rough cuddling.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know. I just made it up.
Oh.
Trademark.
And then just imagine me laying on your chest and be like, I'm going to eat your heart.
Okay.
And I'm not kidding.
Here's a knife.
That's what I'm going to stab it out with. In continuous attempts to prevent Dahmer from attacking him, Edwards repeated that he was Dahmer's friend and that he was not going to run away. So this guy was actually
kind of
really smart.
Mm-hmm.
And Dahmer got a little stupid because, well, I mean, I don't know if he did all this with his other victims. I guess they can't speak for themselves. And he never said so, but usually it seemed like he just incapacitated them pretty quickly without all the theatrics, but
yeah,
I guess who knows? I think he was just getting sloppy. He's getting too cocky.
Maybe this guy was like, he knew he was in danger. He was still doing it. Like, he was still volunteering. So maybe he thought he finally found the one.
Maybe. Potentially. Edwards had decided he was going to either jump from a window or run through the unlocked front door upon the next available opportunity. When Edwards next stated he needed to use the bathroom, he asked if they could sit with a beer in the living room where there was air conditioning. Dahmer consented, and the pair walked to the living room when Edwards exited the bathroom. Inside the living room, Edwards waited until he observed Dahmer have a momentary lapse of concentration before requesting to use the bathroom again. When Edwards rose from the couch, he noted Dahmer was not holding the handcuffs, whereupon Edwards punched him in the face, knocking Dahmer off balance, and ran out the front door. So he was really...
quick about it.
Yeah, he was paying attention. He was definitely very strategic, and he was just waiting. He was on his toes. Mm-hmm. So, and that's really what saved him, because Dahmer was just... He's just acting real sloppy with this one. It doesn't really make sense. Anyway, though, at 11:30 p.m. on July 22nd, Edwards flagged down two Milwaukee officers, Robert Routh and Rolf
Mueller.
Rolf. Sorry, that's funny. Mueller at the corner of North 25th Street. The officers noted Edwards had a handcuff attached to his wrist, whereupon he explained to the officers that a, quote, freak, unquote, had placed the handcuffs upon him and asked if the police could remove them. When the officers' handcuff keys failed to fit the brand of handcuffs, Edwards agreed to accompany the officers to the apartment where Edwards stated he had spent the previous 5 hours before escaping. 5 hours.
Imagine that's that crazy. Awkward talk. You know, you have it with someone for like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Imagine 5 hours worth. I want to go to the bathroom. Okay, try to leave me. See what happens.
Oof. When officers and Edwards arrived at apartment 213, Dahmer invited the trio inside and acknowledged he had indeed placed the handcuffs upon Edwards, although he offered no explanation as to why he had done so.
Interesting.
Yeah. At this point, Edwards divulged to the officers that Dahmer had also brandished a large knife upon him and that he had this had happened in the bedroom. Dahmer made no comment to this revelation, indicating to one of the officers, Mueller, that the key to the handcuff was in his bedside dresser. As Mueller entered the bedroom, Dahmer attempted to pass Mueller to himself retrieve the key, whereupon the second officer present, Routh, informed him to back off.
Well, yeah, they don't know if he has a gun or something.
Yeah. In the bedroom, Mueller noted there was indeed a large knife beneath the bed. He also saw an open drawer, which, upon closer inspection, contained scores of Polaroid pictures, many of which were human bodies in various stages of dismemberment.
Awkward.
Yeah.
He's like, look what we found, Sarge. Look what I found.
So they definitely got more than they bargained for. Yeah. And this was just like, can you imagine stumbling into something like this, basically, as an officer? Like, that's a lucky break for them. They get to say, or they got to say, that was a while ago, so who knows, but they got to say that they brought in one of the, like, worst serial killers.
Oh, yeah. So. And that makes no sense why Jeffrey would just say, I have no idea what you're talking about, but you're not allowed in. Let's just go.
I know. I think, like I said before, like, he was just way too cocky. He had gotten away with things so frequently.
Yeah.
That he felt untouchable, likely, at this point. So Mueller actually noted the decor indicated they had been taken in the very apartment in which they were standing. Mueller walked into the living room to show them to his partner, uttering the words, "These are for real." Oh, man. I can't imagine. I've seen some of the Polaroids, so.
Yeah, they're kind of messed up.
They're really rough. I know I've said this before, they're online, but I would suggest using caution because they're very gruesome and it's heartbreaking. So, but do as you will. When Dahmer saw that Mueller was holding several of his Polaroids, he fought with the officers in an effort to resist arrest. The officers quickly overpowered him, cuffed his hands behind his back, and called a second squad car for backup. At this point, Mueller opened the refrigerator to reveal the freshly severed head of a black man on the bottom shelf. As Dahmer lay pinned on the floor beneath Routh, he turned his head towards the officer and muttered the words, "For what I did, I should be dead." So, I mean, almost immediately it sounds like he
knew he got caught. He messed up bad.
Yeah. It sounds like he always acknowledged that what he was doing was bad, unlike some of the serial killers that we've talked about. Like Gacy. He would never, ever, ever admit that he did.
Yeah, even though there's a proof beyond reasonable doubt.
Yeah. And then Ted Bundy, he, like, was the only reason why he gave up information in the end was he was trying to save his own neck, so.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's still a terrible human. A more detailed search of the apartment conducted by the Milwaukee's Police Criminal Investigation Bureau revealed a total of 4 severed heads in Dahmer's kitchen.
Wow. Yeah. How about, talk about, was there a head of lettuce? No? Just 4 actual heads, okay.
Wow. None worth mentioning. Anyway, a total of 7 skulls, some painted, some bleached, were found in Dahmer's bedroom and inside a closet. In addition, investigators discovered collected blood drippings upon a tray in the bottom of Dahmer's refrigerator, plus 2 human hearts and a portion of arm muscle, each wrapped inside plastic bags upon the shelves. In Dahmer's freezer, investigators discovered an entire torso plus a bag of human organs and flesh stuck to the ice at the bottom. Elsewhere in apartment 213, investigators discovered 2 entire skeletons, a pair of severed heads, 2 severed and preserved penises, a mummified scalp, and in a 57-gallon drum, 3 further dismembered torsos dissolving in the acid solution. A total of 74 Polaroid pictures detailing the dismemberment of Dahmer's victims were found. And in reference to the recovery of body parts and artifacts at 924 North 25th Street, the chief medical examiner later stated, quote, it was more like dismantling someone's museum than an actual crime scene, end quote.
Which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, a lot. There was a lot.
It was not electric.
What?
It's electric. Clap.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm sorry.
I'm trying to make a funny thing out of a sad situation.
No, I know. And they have pictures of Dahmer's apartment as it was,
investigating it. Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I have some of those, so.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'll post some, and Patreon will likely see it all. Likely. So, as Dahmer said in his interview, he pretty much began confessing right away.
Oh, yeah.
Which, duh, there's not much that he can do to contest.
The only thing he could try to do is plead insanity. That's the only option he has.
Well. Yeah. We'll get to that. Beginning in the early hours of July 23rd of 1991, Dahmer was questioned by Detective Patrick Kennedy as to the murders he had committed and the evidence found at his apartment. Over the following 2 weeks, Kennedy and later Detective Patrick Murphy conducted numerous interviews with Dahmer, which, when combined, totaled over 60 hours.
Interesting.
Yeah. So 60 hours over the course of 2 weeks?
It's iffy.
Yeah, but I mean, that's still a lot. Dahmer waived his right to have a lawyer present throughout his interrogations, adding he wished to confess all as he had, quote, created this horror, and it only makes sense I do everything to put an end to it, end quote.
Which is interesting.
I know. And that's why I don't necessarily like Dahmer. But I do appreciate the fact that he was open and honest about everything. Nothing makes me more angry than all the questions that were left behind by those serial killers and murderers who just refused to comply, like Israel Keyes.
Yeah.
He is the actual worst, and we'll have to talk about him. But if you know, then you know what I'm talking about.
You know.
Then you know. If you know, then you know.
You know?
And if you don't know, then you don't know.
And you should know.
But you'll know eventually.
No?
No?
Yes.
Maybe.
Maybe so.
We'll see. He readily admitted to having murdered 16 young men in Wisconsin since 1987, and one further victim, Stephen Hicks, killed in Ohio back in 1978. Most of Dahmer's victims had been rendered unconscious prior to their murder, although some had died as a result of having acid or boiling water injected into their brain. Ugh. That gives me a headache so bad.
You know how you have like a piece of ice cream, you get brain freeze? Acid freeze.
Oh my god. Now I'm going to like think of acid every time I have a brain freeze.
Well,
thanks, Jeff.
No problem. Just for you.
No, my brain. Okay. As he had no memory of the murder of Tuomi, he was unsure whether he was unconscious when beaten to death, although he did concede it was possible that his viewing the exposed chest of Tuomi while in a drunken stupor may have led him to unsuccessfully attempt to tear Tuomi's heart from his chest. Almost all of the murders Dahmer committed after moving into the Oxford apartments had involved a ritual of posing the victims' bodies in suggestive positions, typically with their chest thrust outwards prior to dismemberment, which one of the Polaroids is very famous. It's of a gentleman who was posed in basically a backbend position on the bed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's rough. It's rough. I don't suggest it. Don't know why I put myself through that. That's why I need therapy. Dahmer readily admitted to engaging in necrophilia with several of his victims' bodies, including performing sexual acts with their viscera, which I looked up, and that's a plural form for internal organs.
Huh.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Did you know that?
Viscera? Yeah, I knew that, but I didn't know, like, you...
Yeah, he performed sexual acts with...
the internal organs. Which is so interesting.
Yeah.
He really didn't have the gut for it, huh? No, he had the gut for it.
He had too much guts.
So he's like, what? What are those animals with like four or five? The cows? He's like a cow with the guts. The more guts, the merrier.
Five stomachs or something.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he could make one of those crude comments like, I want to be in his guts. But he literally wanted to be in his guts.
Ew.
I'm sorry.
Okay, we're getting off topic, Kaylee.
I'll leave. Having noted that much of the blood pooled inside his victim's chest after death, Dahmer first removed their internal organs, then suspended the torso so the blood drained into his bathtub before dicing any organs he did not wish to retain and parting the flesh from the body. The bones he wished to dispose of were pulverized or acidified with Soilex and bleach solutions used to aid in the preservation of the skeletons and skulls he wished to keep.
At least he's efficient now.
Yeah, he got extremely efficient.
That's not good.
No, it's not. In addition, Dahmer confessed to having consumed the hearts, livers, biceps, and portions of thighs of several victims killed within the previous year. He described the increase in his rate of killing in the 2 months prior to his arrest. Dahmer stated he had been completely swept along with his compulsion to kill, adding, it was an incessant and never-ending desire to be with someone at whatever cost. Someone good-looking, really nice-looking. It just filled my thoughts all day long.
So, I wish I had that pair of shoes. No, this guy's like, I want this guy's heart beating in my hand.
Well, not beating, but...
Well, for a split second, we'll be beating.
I don't know.
You also try to pump, Kaylee.
You try to pump?
Pump, pump, pump it up.
When asked as to why he had preserved a total of 7 skulls and the entire skeletons of 2 victims, Dahmer stated he had been in the process of constructing a private altar of victim skulls, which he had intended to display on the black table located in his living room, upon which he had photographed the bodies of many of his victims. An altar is the word that I was looking for last week. So.
Or Game of Thrones is better.
The display of skulls was to be adorned at each side with the complete skeletons of Miller and Lacey. The 4 severed heads found in his kitchen were to be removed of all flesh and used in this altar, as was the skull of at least 1 future victim. Incense sticks were placed at each end of the black table, above which Dahmer intended to place a large blue lamp and extending blue globe lights. He had it all planned out. And I have the pictures, so it'll all make sense. The entire construction was to be placed before a window covered with a black opaque shower curtain, in front of which Dahmer intended to sit a black leather chair. So he was going to have a little throne. When asked in a November 18th, 1991 interview who the altar was dedicated to, Dahmer replied, "Myself. It was a place where I could feel at home."
Interesting.
Yeah. He further described his intended altar as a place for meditation, from where he believed he could draw a sense of power, adding, "If this, his arrest, had happened 6 months later, that's what they would have found."
Wow.
Yeah.
And then he could have sold it for a lot of money.
Well, not if he got caught.
Was that Bagan? No.
No, we'll talk about that later, too.
Okay.
On July 25th, 1991, Dahmer was charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder. By August 22nd, he had been charged with a further 11 murders committed in Wisconsin. On September 14th, investigators in Ohio had uncovered hundreds of bone fragments in woodland behind the address in which Dahmer had confessed to killing his first victim. Formally identified 2 molars and a vertebrae with x-ray records of Hicks. So they got pretty lucky being able to identify what little they found, and especially back then.
And he was able to say, yeah, this was the guy, so it matched up.
Yeah. 3 days later, Dahmer was charged by authorities in Ohio with Hicks' murder. Dahmer was not charged with the attempted murder of Edwards, nor with the murder of Tuomi. He was not charged with Tuomi's murder because a Milwaukee County district attorney only brought charges where murder could be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And Dahmer had no memory of actually committing this particular murder, for which no physical evidence of the crime existed. So, that's the guy that he...
Yeah, just beat in.
Yeah. At a scheduled preliminary hearing on January 13th, 1992, Dahmer pleaded guilty, but insane, to 15 counts of murder.
Of course you would try to do that. But...
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much of it was him and how much of it was his attorneys.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that legally...
You would try to do that.
I don't know. But I don't know.
And then that one guy, they didn't charge for kidnapping, or because I guess he went with them. But he didn't let him leave, so...
I don't understand why they didn't charge him for attempted murder. I guess maybe they couldn't prove... I don't know.
Intent to kill?
But the knife and the handcuffs, I don't know.
Threatening, just like a misdemeanor, something. Come on, dude.
I know, something.
The guy's like, I could have died. I saved everything.
Well, that's kind of messed up, because can you imagine, like, if that was a female? Like, they probably would have charged him. But because it was 2 males, maybe?
Maybe, that's why.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, Dahmer's trial began on January 30th of 1992. He was tried in Milwaukee for the 15 counts of first-degree murder before Judge Lawrence Graham. By pleading guilty on January 13th to the charges brought against him, Dahmer had waived his right to an initial trial to establish guilt, as defined in Wisconsin law. The issue debated by opposing counsels at Dahmer's trial was to determine whether he suffered from either a mental or personality disorder. The prosecution claimed that any disorders did not deprive Dahmer of the ability to appreciate the criminality of his conduct, or to deprive him of the ability to resist his impulses. The defense argued that Dahmer suffered from a mental disease and was driven by obsession and impulses he was unable to control. To a point, I understand that he had these impulses, but...
He knew about him. He technically wasn't insane. Well, like
you said, with your road rage, like, you have those thoughts, but then they go away.
Or you can
control them. And you never act on them.
You never act on them.
So
you just did.
Yeah. I mean, I've never had fantasies to that extent, but...
Yeah. Like, so if I actually had those thoughts and I got drunk and I decided to go have a road rage and I decided to kill someone that night.
I mean, that's one thing. I think that people do have lapses in judgment and make really stupid split decisions, but most people are not gonna
do it 21
go
times.
On. Yeah, exactly.
That's why I said about one guy that he crushes chest in.
Yeah.
He could have potentially got away with that for insanity because he didn't know and lost and so. But, you know, they had all this other proven.
So. Yeah, it's a lot.
Nice try, Jeffrey.
I know, seriously. Defense experts argued that Dahmer was insane due to his necrophilic drive, his compulsion to have sexual encounters with corpses. Defense expert Dr. Fred Berlin testified that Dahmer was unable to conform his conduct at the time that he committed the crimes because he was suffering from paraphilia, or more specifically, necrophilia. Dr. Judith Becker, a professional of psychiatry and psychology, was the second expert witness for the defense. Becker also diagnosed Dahmer with necrophilia. The final defense expert to testify was forensic psychiatrist Dr. Carl Wahlstrom. Diagnosed Dahmer with necrophilia, borderline personality disorder, schizotypal personality disorder, alcohol dependence, and a psychotic disorder. The prosecution rejected the defense's argument that Dahmer was insane. Which, good. I don't think he was insane. I don't think he was right in the head. But he knew what he was doing.
Yeah. He planned it out a lot of different times.
And he confessed to knowing it was wrong.
Especially when he was caught.
Over and over. Yeah.
Like, he never once lied about anything.
No. He knew from the beginning that he was doing something wrong. So.
And the thing, a lot of it is, if you are insane, you say a story that's not always 100% true.
Yeah.
So.
So the prosecution, oh yeah, I said that. Forensics psychiatrist Dr. Philip Resnick testified that Dahmer did not suffer from primary necrophilia because he preferred live sexual partners, as evidenced by his efforts to create unresistant, submissive sexual partners devoid of rational thought and to whose needs did not have to cater. So basically his
zombie.
Mm-hmm.
Which technically he wanted both.
He wanted someone alive and warm, but dead.
Yeah, while he had his chair.
Yeah. Another prosecution expert who testified, Dr. Fred Fosdell, testified to his belief that Dahmer was without mental disease or defect at the time he committed the murders. Which I don't know if I agree with that. Like I said, I don't think his ducks weren't in a row. That's for sure.
Yeah.
He had issues, but I couldn't diagnose him because I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think he has two or three different things he'd be counted for. The defense was saying he was obsessed with necrophilia. That's why he had to kill him. Well, not because he was a murderer, but because he had to be necrophilia.
The alcohol dependence was big. I think that definitely had a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Alcoholism can affect people in big ways when, I mean, it's just kind of known that alcoholics are very selfish individuals, and typically they have things like narcissistic personality disorder, things like that. So, I mean, that would make sense as to, like, him feeling like everything was owed to him, and I don't know. I'm not a professional, but I know his ducks weren't in a row. That's all I know.
Yeah.
That's all that matters, I guess. He described Dahmer as a calculating and cunning individual, able to differentiate between right and wrong, with the ability to control his actions. Which I also agree. He never went out and just, like, slaughtered people out in public. He knew how to do things discreetly, and he was very calculated with how he disposed of those bodies. So, as to not get caught. Although Fosdell did state his belief that Dahmer suffered from paraphilia, his conclusion was that Dahmer was not a sadist. Which I don't agree with.
I don't agree with that at all. Okay, dude. You're okay with part of it, but not all of it.
I mean, I know that he said that he didn't like killing. The killing was a means to an end, or whatever Dahmer said. But I just don't... The fact that he took the Polaroids in the various stages of dismemberment leads me to believe that that is false.
Yeah.
Because why would you, if like that part of it disturbed you, why would you sit there and revel in them and keep your little trophies of that whole process?
Yeah. It does not make any sense.
The final witness to appear for the prosecution was forensic psychiatrist Park Dietz, who began his testimony on February 12th. Dietz testified that he did not believe Dahmer to be suffering from any mental disease or defect at the time that he committed the crime, stating Dahmer went to great lengths to be alone with his victim and to have no witnesses. He explained that there was ample evidence that Dahmer prepared in advance for each murder, therefore his crimes were not impulsive. Although Dietz did concede that acquisition of a paraphilia was not a matter of personal choice, he also stated that his belief that Dahmer's habit of becoming intoxicated prior to committing each of the murders was significant, stating, "If he had a compulsion to kill, he would not have to drink alcohol. He had to drink alcohol to overcome his inhibition to do the crime, which he would rather not do." Which, okay, whatever. But, like, he still did it 16 times. Yeah. So, he didn't not like it that much.
Or when that the time when that guy went home with them.
Uh-huh.
When he didn't, go, like, bring him home. He could have been like, no, okay, sorry, bye.
Yeah.
Instead, he's like, okay, just go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I know. Dietz also noted that Dahmer strongly identified with the evil and corrupt characters from both The Exorcist 3 and The Return of the Jedi.
Interesting.
Particularly the level of power held by these characters.
So you're saying he's a Jedi.
So you're saying he is Darth Vader.
And demon.
And demonic.
Demonic Jedi Chewbacca. Jar Jar. He's Jar Jar Binks.
He's no, you don't disrespect Jar Jar like that.
Misa, Misa, Jeffrey Dahmer. Misa, Misa, eat your heart.
I love Jar Jar.
Not anymore. Misa, Misa, Jeffrey, Jar Jar.
Everybody just stopped listening right there.
That's so loud.
I know. Why'd you do that? I'm just kidding.
I don't care. Get over it.
Expounding on the significance of these movies on Dahmer's psyche and many of the murders committed at the Oxford apartments, Dietz explained that Dahmer occasionally viewed scenes from these films before searching for a victim. Dietz diagnosed Dahmer with substance use disorder, paraphilia, and schizotypal personality disorder. They had a lot of doctors. Two court-appointed mental health professionals testifying independently of either prosecution or defense. Sorry. Two court-appointed mental health professionals testifying independently of either prosecution or defense were forensic psychiatrist George Palermo and clinical psychologist Samuel Friedman. Palermo stated that the murders were the result of a pent-up aggression within himself. He killed those men because he wanted to kill the source of his homosexual attractions to them. In killing them, he killed what he hated in himself. I don't like that.
That was just how they thought back then.
Yeah. I don't think that I think that he had pent-up aggression within himself.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was... Anyway, that's what he said. Palermo concluded that Dahmer was a sexual sadist with antisocial personality disorder, but legally sane. Friedman testified that it was a longing for companionship that caused Dahmer to kill. He stated, "Mr. Dahmer is not psychotic. He spoke kindly of Dahmer, describing him as amiable, pleasant to be with, courteous, with a sense of humor, conventionally handsome, and charming in manner. He was and still is a bright young man."
Of course.
Which, in the interviews, you can see that.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the whole, like, narcissistic personality, you know, where they really try to charm you and, like, pull you in, and then he gets the doors like closed them. And he yeah. tries to put handcuffs on you and rip your heart out.
Yeah. All in that order, Kaylee.
Yep.
right? Is that what happened?
Well, I mean, you can do it in a different order, but I think that's likely what he did. He was diagnosed Dahmer with a personality disorder not otherwise specified, featuring borderline, obsessive, compulsive, and sadistic traits. The trial lasted 2 weeks on February 14th. Oh, Valentine's Day. Both counsels delivered their closing arguments to the jury.
I love how they have it, his case, on Heart Day. Valentine's Day. Hearts everywhere, especially in his belly.
Oh, God. That's so...
bad.
Nasty. I just, ugh.
Here's a card for you, Jeffrey. What happened?
How do you get to that point in life? I don't... Anyway.
Ask him.
I don't want to. Each counsel was allowed to speak for 2 hours. Defense attorney Gerald Boyle argued first, repeatedly harking to the testimony of the mental health professionals, almost all of whom had agreed that Dahmer was suffering from a mental disease. Boyle argued that Dahmer's compulsive killings had been a result of a sickness he discovered, not chose.
I don't believe that.
No.
He said he always knew. He always liked it. He said he always wanted to.
Yeah, and he repressed those feelings and those thoughts and those fantasies from everyone. And if he would have just, like, discussed them, there could have potentially been help for him.
Or, you know, if he just stuck with his job.
But also, you have to, like, think about that specific era. Mental health was not taken seriously, especially in men. They were expected to be the strong providers who...
They still don't take men serious.
No, they don't. That's very true. It's sad. I take you seriously. I value your thoughts and opinions. Please tell me if you have crazy homicidal thoughts.
Hey, Kaylee, how does your heart taste?
You want to find out?
Is it dark like mine?
What? Okay,
guys, remember this might be the last episode.
Well, they hear you here, so they know that I haven't killed you.
Or I haven't killed you.
Yet.
Suicide pact.
It's going to happen in Disneyland.
Pirates?
Yeah.
Or what? Well, okay, we'll talk about that later.
Anyway, Boyle portrayed Dahmer as a desperately lonely and profoundly sick individual. So out of control, he could not conform his conduct anymore. Following the defense's counsel 75-minute closing argument, Michael McCann delivered his closing argument for the prosecution, describing Dahmer as a sane man in full control of his actions who simply strove to avoid detection. McCann argued that the act of murder was committed in hostility, anger, resentment, frustration, or hatred, and that his 15 victims for whose murder he was tried died merely to afford Dahmer a period of sexual pleasure. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can diagnose whatever you want, but at the end of the day...
You still killed people.
Yes. And disposed of their bodies in...
Yeah, horrible ways.
Horrible ways. Or kept their bodies and consumed them.
And kept their skulls.
McCann further argued that by pleading guilty but insane to his charges, Dahmer was seeking to escape responsibility for his crimes. On February 15th, the court reconvened to hear the verdict. Dahmer was ruled to be sane and not suffering from a mental disorder at the time of each of the 15 murders for which he was tried, although in each count, 2 of the 12 jurors signified their dissent. On the first 2 counts, Dahmer was sentenced to life imprisonment plus 10 years, with the remaining 13 counts of a mandatory sentence of life imprisonment plus 70 years. The death penalty was not an option for the judge. For Judge Graham to consider at the penalty phase, as Wisconsin had abolished capital punishment in 1853.
And that was the first mistake.
In your opinion. Upon hearing of Dahmer's sentencing, actually, I don't really know how I feel about it anyway.
It all depends. We're all different.
Yeah. But, like, In Dahmer's case,
I think, yeah. Just put him in the wood chipper next to all those pedophiles.
Well, I mean, that's a big discussion, so I don't know how deep we want to go into it right now, but...
Maybe we'll make an episode. Prison
is, like, I don't know.
We'll talk about this another day.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to get into. Upon hearing of Dahmer's sentence, his father Lionel and stepmother Shari requested to be allowed a 10-minute private meeting with their son before he was transferred to the Columbia Correctional Institute in Portage to begin his sentence. This request was granted, with the trio exchanging hugs and well wishes before Dahmer was escorted away. 3 months after his conviction in Milwaukee, Dahmer was extradited to Ohio to be tried for the murder of his first victim, Stephen Hicks. In a court hearing lasting just 45 minutes, Dahmer again pleaded guilty to the charges and was sentenced to a 16th term of life imprisonment on May 1st of 1992. Upon that sentencing, Dahmer was transferred to the Columbia Correctional Institution. For the first year of his incarceration, Dahmer was placed in solitary confinement due to the concerns of his physical safety should he come into contact with fellow inmates. With Dahmer's consent, after 1 year in solitary confinement, he was transferred to a less secure unit where he was assigned a 2-hour daily work detail, cleaning the toilet block. Shortly after completing his lengthy confession in 1991, Dahmer had requested to Detective Murphy that he be given a copy of the Bible. This request was granted, and Dahmer gradually devoted himself to Christianity and became a born-again Christian.
Of course he would.
Anyway, I'm not going to make a comment on that, because...
To each their own.
To each their own. And we don't know. We didn't know him.
I know Jeffreys are all crap.
I know a Jeffrey, but...
Every Jeffrey I know is stupid.
Anyway. On his father's urging, he also read creationist book from the Institute for Creation Research. In May of 1994, Dahmer was baptized by Roy Ratcliffe, a minister in the Church of Christ, and a graduate of Oklahoma Christian University in the prison Whirlpool. Following his baptism, Ratcliffe visited Dahmer on a weekly basis up until November of 1994. Dahmer and Ratcliffe regularly discussed the prospect of death, and Dahmer questioned whether he was sinning against God by continuing to live. And he did say something about God in one of the clips.
I mean, if a person doesn't think that there is a God to be accountable to, then what's the point of trying to modify your behavior to keep it within acceptable ranges? That's how I thought, anyway. And I've since come to believe that the Lord Jesus Christ is truly God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. They're the only true God.
So yeah, that is what Dahmer said in his interview with Stone Phillips on Dateline NBC. And whether you believe it or not, that's what he stated. And that's what he said he believed. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So.
It's kind of interesting to hear it straight from his mouth instead of having to... Yeah,
especially on an interview on a late night TV show program. That was one of the most viewed, I guess, shows at the time.
Yeah.
Because everyone wanted to know. Yeah. No one really knew what was inside the mind of a serial killer.
Like, I know we've said it over and over and over again, but the fact that he was such an open book about everything, and he wasn't arrogant about how he said it, and so he was able to be interviewed because he was respectful and...
Oh, yeah, and his dad and others were writing books about him, and he would actually, like not sponsor, but talk about it. Like, yeah, this happened or this didn't happen. I read this and I thought about this and...
I mean, if you guys have the time, I would definitely go and listen to the Stone Phillips interview because it's really, really interesting.
You get his perspective, his dad's, his mom's. Yeah, so you kind of see a little bit of everything of what could have gone wrong.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So, in July of 1994, a fellow inmate, Osvaldo Duruthi, attempted to slash Dahmer's throat with a razor embedded and his toothbrush as Dahmer returned to his cell from Ratcliffe's weekly church service conducted in the prison chapel. Dahmer received superficial wounds and was not seriously hurt in this incident. According to Dahmer's family, he had long been ready to die and accepted any punishment which he might endure in prison. In addition, his father and stepmother maintaining regular contact. Dahmer's mother, Joyce, also maintaining regular contact with her son. I feel like that was said really weird. So, basically, his family kept in contact with him the entire time. Prior to the arrest, Dahmer and his mother had not seen each other since Christmas of 1983. But for whatever reason, the arrest happened to bring them closer.
Interesting.
Which, I mean, is very, very interesting. Joyce related that in her weekly phone calls, whenever she expressed concerns for her son's physical well-being, Dahmer responded with comments to the effect of, "It doesn't matter, Mom. I don't care if something happens to me." So, it's kind of sad. And here we are again, feeling bad for Dahmer.
I don't. You deserve whatever
happens. Fine, I'm speaking for myself then.
I'm heartless.
With that being said, on the morning of November 28th of 1994, Dahmer left his cell to conduct his assigned work detail. Accompanying him were two fellow inmates, Jesse Anderson and Christopher Scarver. The trio were left unsupervised in the showers of the prison gym for approximately 20 minutes. At approximately 8:10 a.m., Dahmer was discovered on the floor of the bathrooms of the gym, suffering from extreme head and facial wounds. He had been severely bludgeoned about the head and face with a 20-inch metal bar. His head had also been repeatedly struck against the wall in the assault. Although Dahmer was still alive and was rushed to a nearby hospital, he was pronounced dead 1 hour later. Anderson had also been beaten with the same instrument and died 2 days later from his wounds. Scarver, who was serving a life sentence for a murder committed in 1990, informed authorities he had first attacked Dahmer with a metal bar as he, Dahmer, was cleaning a staff locker room before attacking Anderson as he, Anderson, cleaned an inmate locker room. According to Scarver, Dahmer did not yell or make any noise as he was attacked. Immediately after attacking both men, Scarver, who was thought to be a schizophrenic, returned to his cell and informed a prison guard, "God told me to do it. Jesse Anderson and Jeffrey Dahmer are dead."
So, that's really...
It's crazy to me that, like, he still survived all of that. I think it's part of the whole karma thing that he had to live through.
For an hour and do all that and suffer through all that.
Yeah.
Especially by someone who was crazy, supposedly.
Yeah, supposedly. Scarver was adamant he had not planned the attacks in advance, although he later divulged to investigators he had concealed a 20-inch iron bar used to kill both men in his clothing shortly before the killings. Upon learning of his death, Dahmer's mother Joyce responded angrily to the media. "Now is everybody happy? Now that he's bludgeoned to death? Is that good enough for everyone?"
Yes. Sorry.
I imagine, like, I get why she's sad, but honestly, like, her outrage is misplaced because...
Technically...
She's allowed to have feelings as a mother.
Yeah.
But it probably wasn't wise of her to, like, go to media.
Everyone. Yeah, go after everyone like that.
Because there are 17 families that...
Suffered because...
Yeah.
For sure
had suffered. Their kids' hearts ripped out and eaten, so, like... Maybe it's not enough.
The only place she can get mad at is the prison for not watching him for longer than 20 minutes.
Yeah. So the response of the families of Dahmer's victims were mixed, although it appears most were pleased with his death, which, yeah. The district attorney who prosecuted Dahmer cautioned against turning Scarver into a folk hero, noting that Dahmer's death was still murder. On May 15th of 1995, Scarver was sentenced to two additional terms of life imprisonment for the murders of Dahmer and Anderson. Although Scarver had confessed in 1994 to having concealed the weapon used to kill Dahmer and Anderson in his clothing, on the morning of the murders in 2015, he publicly stated that the murders of Dahmer and Anderson had resulted from a confrontation in which one of the two men had poked him in the back as the three had begun their assigned work detail. Which, okay, so he poked you in the back, so you killed him?
Well, yeah, you don't...
Beat him to death?
What did you get poked with?
I don't know, it didn't say.
You never know.
In this renewed account of events, Scarver claimed that the two had laughed at him when he had turned around in response before Dahmer and Anderson each walked to separate rooms to begin their cleaning duty, with Scarver following Dahmer toward the staff locker room. Scarver alleges that immediately before murdering Dahmer, he had cornered him, presented a newspaper article detailing Dahmer's crimes, and demanding that Dahmer answer whether the account was true. Scarver further alleged that he had been revolted by Dahmer's crimes and that Dahmer had been openly unrepentant, that Dahmer taunted prison employees and fellow inmates by shaping his prison food into imitations of severed limbs, complete with ketchup to simulate blood, and the prison staff, knowing of Scarver's hatred for Dahmer, deliberately left the two men unsupervised so that he could kill him. Furthermore, Scarver stated that Dahmer was so disliked by fellow inmates that he required a personal escort of at least one guard whenever he was out of his cell to prevent inmates from attacking him. Dahmer had stated in his will that he wished for no service to be conducted and that he wished to be cremated. In September of 1995, Dahmer's body was cremated and his ashes divided between his parents. So, let's talk about the food thing.
Okay. I like food.
He would rearrange his food to look like severed limbs and like human bodies.
And that's that one of the guys, the guy who originally tried to attack him first, was like, that's why I don't like him. He's crazy. He's weird. He's sick.
Isn't that insane?
Well, kind of.
I hate it because, like, when you first hear it, it's like, that's hilarious, but it's not funny. It's hilarious, but it's not funny.
Well, my family called me Jeffrey, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer once, because I used to bite the heads off of the gummy bears. At, like, Golden Corral and the fast food.
That is not the same.
Kind of. I used to bite off the legs and just, like, have them fight, like, put them head on pikes.
So it was just gummy torsos?
Gummy torsos, gummy heads. No! I used to get toothpicks and just stab them, make a little, like, fort. And they're like, calm down, little Jeffrey. I'm like, I don't get it. They're like, good. I'm like, now that I'm older, I'm like, oh, you're calling me Jeffrey Dahmer. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Thanks, Mom and Dad. Anyway, it's funny, but it's not funny.
Kind of funny.
Kind of funny. So, after all of that, on August 5th of 1991, as the nature and scale of Dahmer's crimes initially came to light, a candlelight vigil to celebrate and heal the Milwaukee community was attended by more than 400 people. Present at the vigil were community leaders, gay rights activists, and family members of several of Dahmer's victims. Organizers stated the purpose of the vigil was to enable Milwaukeeans to share their feelings and pain and anger over what happened. The Oxford Apartments at 924 North 25th Street, where Dahmer had killed 12 of his victims, were demolished in November of 1992. The site is said to be a vacant lot. Everywhere I looked, I tried to find some sort of updated article. But the most recent one I found was in, like, 2011.
Yeah.
And from what I saw in Street View, it's, like, a grassy field that's attached to an apartment complex. So I think that they divided that property up. There's apartments on there now.
Oh, I don't have the same. I want to see the ones that he was in.
No, they were demolished.
Like, hello. What room are we in? Jeffrey's room, because I'm Jeffrey. Yeah. I'm Jeffrey.
Also, Dahmer's estate was awarded to the families of his 11 victims who had sued for damages. And so, in 1996, Thomas Jacobson, a lawyer representing 8 of the families, announced a planned auction of Dahmer's estate. Although, victim's relatives stated the motivation was not greed. The announcement sparked controversy. So people were saying that they were just greedy.
Well, anyway, if he ate my son, husband, whatever, he ate him.
I know.
I want at least his couch.
Like, I don't see why it would be that big of a deal for them to...
Because people are stupid and selfish.
But a civic group, Milwaukee Civic Pride, was quickly established in an effort to raise the funds to purchase and destroy Dahmer's possessions. The group pledged $407,225, including a $100,000 gift by Milwaukee real estate developer Joseph Zilber for purchase of Dahmer's estate. Five of the eight families represented by Jacobson agreed to the terms, and Dahmer's possessions were subsequently destroyed and buried in an undisclosed Illinois landfill. So.
We should go look for it.
Okay.
One little piece of Jeffrey.
Yeah. Let's just go search every landfill in Illinois.
That's not that bad. I mean, if not, we might find some, you know, other people over there, like... John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah.
I wonder if they knew each other.
Probably not.
I wonder if they were all friends.
Wasn't he? He was after
John Wayne Gacy. He was. Anyway.
So Jeffrey Dahmer's dad, Lionel, is retired and now lives with his second wife, Sherry. Both have refused to change their surname and have professed their love for Dahmer in spite of his crimes. In 1994, Lionel published a book, A Father's Story, and donated a portion of the proceeds from his book to the victims' families. Most of the families showed support for Lionel and Sherry, although three families subsequently sued Lionel, two for using their names in the book without obtaining prior consent.
Which he should have.
Yes, and a third family, that of Stephen Hicks, filing a wrongful death suit against Lionel, Sherry, and former wife Joyce, citing parental negligence as the cause for the claim.
Yes.
Which they had the right because he was living in their house.
Without anything.
With no supervision.
Yeah, that's when they're having their divorce and, you know, the dad was just living in a hotel even though he didn't have to. And
yeah. Joyce Flint died of cancer in November of 2000. Prior to her death, she had attempted suicide on at least one occasion. So she was largely affected by that.
Yeah.
Which, rightfully so. And Dahmer's younger brother, David, changed his surname and lives in anonymity.
Imagine being that brother and having, like, grandkids and stuff. Like, your great uncle was Jeffrey the Dahmer.
Jeffrey the Dahmer.
The people Dahmer.
No, but imagine being the grandkid and then finding it out and like
ancestry.
Asking your grandpa or your
yeah,
whoever, your dad about it.
Like, we don't talk about our uncle. Why? What did he do?
We don't talk about it.
Everyone has that one uncle.
Oh.
Kind of, though.
True.
Oh.
So, anyway, that is Jeffrey Dahmer, the people Dahmer.
Nom, 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 nom.
Part 3.
Thank you guys for listening.
Yeah. I know that we just kind of stuck to it, but it was a lot of information to get out, and we have stuff to do.
I guess so. People to eat, things to do.
Things to do, people to eat.
Yes.
Sure.
You want to hear a funny... Oh, okay, gosh. It's not a weird law. Uh-huh. Well, we didn't really do one for Wisconsin, so I have a joke. Did you know it's not illegal to have cannibalism?
What? What?
Somewhat.
Why? How?
So I was looking over the overview and the technical law of everything. States have enacted laws that indirectly make it impossible to legally obtain and consume the body matter. But if you don't know about it and someone serves you it, you still technically won't get in trouble for it.
Well, yeah, because if you consume it unknowingly.
So if someone consents to being eaten and kills himself, the cannibal may still be liable for criminal or civil actions based on laws governing the abuse or desecration of the corpse. So depending on how they kill themselves and how you eat them, you can actually get away with it.
Really?
According to some of the statutes.
In certain Wisconsin? States.
That's what I was looking. There was one I was going to look up, but it used to be in Wisconsin, but they changed it.
Oh. So. Well, probably after the freaking people nommer.
After the people nommer.
Jeffrey Dahmer, the people nommer.
But yeah, the real one I want to look at was, sorry, it's illegal to shoot animals from an airplane.
If someone can successfully shoot an animal from an airplane, give them a medal. Don't throw them in jail. Are you kidding?
But it's like, wouldn't you be deathly afraid of accidentally taking out a few humans? Oops.
No, I mean, yeah.
Although there will certainly be an interesting twist when deer hunting season rolls around. Look, I'm gonna get him, Jimmy. I'm gonna get him good.
That really cuts out the trick shots, doesn't it?
Look, backflip.
360 no scope.
Anyway, okay, that was my stupid little things.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
No problem, Kaylee. So, how can you find us, Kaylee?
So, if you guys want more content, we have some spooky, haunted episodes posted on our Patreon. Ooh. We went to actual haunted hotels and stayed overnight and got some spooky evidence.
Like two.
Two hotels.
So far.
And there's some spooky photos that I think we caught a ghost on camera. Jeff is still skeptical, but...
I don't believe in anything. I'm myself, so don't... I don't blame you, Kaylee.
Anyway, it's fine. I believe it, so that's all that matters. So anyway, if you go on our Patreon, that's patreon.com/theUnitedStatesofHorror, you can find more spooky content on there. You could also support us through our Anchor by doing a monthly donation or just a one-time donation of sorts. And that helps us get better equipment, a better setup, so that we can provide better...
lodgings and things for you.
Better quality. I mean, I think our quality is pretty good, but we would like to add audio or visual, I mean, at some point.
Let's add audio. We want
to add more audio.
My mixtape.
So yeah, anyway, you could do that, or you can find
us
on Instagram. That's at United States of Horror. We're also on Facebook. That's facebook.com/United States of Horror. We have a Facebook page where we can discuss things amongst ourselves and just post random stuff. That's the United States of Horror Fanatics. And then we have Twitter and TikTok. That's at US of Horror. And
like, share, we're on Anchor.
Subscribe.
You know where to find us if you're listening.
Please share with your friends and family. Love us, please. Talk to us.
Make me famous. Jeff here.
Kaylee here.
And we are the United States of Horror.
Signing out.
Bye.
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 That was a cute little outro.
Not really. I'm cute. Nothing else.
Okay.